Cradio.org.au.
Over the past couple of weeks, we've been blessed to have popular Catholic author and radio personality Patrick Madrid grace our shores. That's thanks to Sydney's Catholic Adult Education Centre and the Mustard Seed Bookshop. With only one stop left in his busy itinerary, Patrick made some time to catch up with Luke again, this time in person. Have a listen.
All right, so thanks, Patrick, for joining us
today
on Cradio. I just want to ask, first off, how have you been finding Australia so far with your tour?
It's magnificent. The country is so beautiful. The people are very welcoming and friendly. And I had mentioned earlier that this is my third lecture tour of Australia in about 17 or 18 years. Probably getting close to 20 years. Third tour in 20 years. And I just have had no end of wonderful meetings with people and the opportunities to get to know a few bishops, and it's just been great.
Yeah, that's good. What do you think has been your highlight so far?
Well, on the off the clock side of things, you know, touring Sydney Harbour and going to Manly Beach and seeing some of the wonderful things, the Blue Mountains and things like that, have been great. But for me, the highlights have been at each place, the different lectures that I've given, and the opportunity to meet the people in that local place, times to visit with them, sign books, and get to know them better. So I don't mean to give you too general of an answer, but it would be hard to pick out any one place and say that was the highlight. They've all been wonderful.
Yeah. We don't want any state or city rivalry.
No.
Saying, oh, Sydney's the best or Brisbane's the best or anything like that.
I probably could, though, say that it was particularly interesting to do the Theology on Tap talk on atheism, and there were, I don't know what the exact number was, but I've heard figures anywhere from 600 to 1,000 people. Mm. So that was truly something.
Yeah, I was there back on, I think it was Monday night last week. And yeah, it's probably one of the most packed I've seen it.
Awesome.
We tend to get a lot of people there at Theology on Tap, but that one was definitely one of the biggest I've seen so far.
Great.
They had to recently move to accommodate the new people. It's been growing for the last couple of years. It feels like they're almost outgrowing this new venue again.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how they're going to get anywhere bigger
than
that.
Maybe they'll have to start branching off and have different chapters in different cities or something.
that might be a possibility in the future. But So what I wanted to talk to you about today, or ask you about today, is masculinity. Now, I went to the Parramatta Diocesan and Sydney Archdiocese event on masculinity at St. Patrick's Cathedral in Parramatta, and I thought that was really good.
Thank you.
I just really wanted to kind of capture a little bit more of what you talked about there.
Sure.
So what do you see as the main problems facing masculinity today, specifically in the Western world, like Australia, the United States, the English-speaking parts of Europe, that kind of area? What do you see?
Yes, and those, of course, would be the areas that I would have the most experience with. I believe I may have said it in the talk, but I think I could encapsulate one of the problems by saying that until men understand what it means to be a man, they won't know what kind of man they're called to be. And they won't know how to become that man, the man that Christ wants us to be. It is, it's not esoteric knowledge. It's certainly not something that is hidden from view. But modern society and a lot of the pressures and temptations in society have really made it difficult for a lot of guys to actually see what's right there in plain view. Some of the problems that I mentioned during that talk would be things like pornography, an addiction to gadgets. You know, we all have, to some extent or another, we have gadgets in our lives. I mean, I have an iPad. I love the iPad, and I love my iPhone, but I recognize that they're just means to an end. Mm-hmm. And if I were to allow myself to indulge that appetite, they could become almost like little false gods, you know, where I pay all my attention to them and become too wrapped up. And I think a lot of guys are finding themselves in that situation. Video games, another huge problem. Not in themselves. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a video game per se, although there are some bad video games. But the idea of playing a video game is not bad in itself, and we even have one in our home. My teenage boys love to play it, but my wife and I are very careful that we don't let it become an all-consuming pastime. And the more it goes, the more it seems that a lot of men today are caught up in this fantasy world of gadgets, pornography, and video games. And so they're losing touch with what it really means to be a man, And every man is going to have a different way about him. So I'm not suggesting that everyone has to be alike or everyone has to look a certain way. I'm not talking about that. But the idea of manly virtue, of leadership, productivity, attention to one's own spiritual life, those are things that I think are getting lost along the way for many men today.
Mm. Do you think that you mentioned today, you also mentioned things like technology, video games. Mm-hmm. Do you think that this, what we're seeing now, this kind of crisis of masculinity, if you will, do you think that's really a recent thing? Or is that something that the church has seen over its whole 2,000-year history, these problems with masculinity?
I think so. I think so to the latter point. In other words, this is not a new phenomenon. What's new about it are the new ways in which men can become distracted and sidetracked from their real mission. So although video games didn't exist 30, 40 years ago, our parents and grandparents didn't have to worry about that sort of thing. There were other things in those days, and it was probably, I would say, the same basic problem, but just with different manifestations of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that case, what do you think the root is of these problems? Where do you think these problems come from?
Mm-hmm. Well, some are from outside us. The Bible talks about the world, the flesh, and the devil. And so those are the things that are always, in one way or another, out there as potential temptations or distractions. And that's, of course, the way of the world. So we know that from Christ himself, that this is part of the world that we live in. But some of the problems, I think, arise from within a man. If I were to do my own kind of self-analysis on that point, and any other man who were to do it for himself, I think we would all be able to pinpoint certain either vices or tendencies towards certain kind of predominant sins. It could be sensuality, it could be sloth, it could be intemperance with food and drink. So the sins, you know, it could also be pride, it could be anger. I mean, the seven capital sins are easy to remember, but those, it seems to me, are where our own personal frailties or our own personal weaknesses can become vulnerable. And the way to combat that, of course, is to cultivate the opposing virtue. So if a man has a problem with sensuality, let's say, in food or drink or sex, that kind of thing, then by cultivating the virtues of modesty and temperance, things like that, it can actually combat that. The problem is that I don't think modern society and people today think much in terms of things like sin and virtue. And I even, believe it or not, from time to time, I'll get an angry email or an indignant letter from somebody who is outraged that I would even talk about sin because that's judgmental and that's divisive and things like that, which it astonishes me every time somebody reacts that way, because it just simply reinforces my recognition that we have drifted a long way away from kind of our common sense Catholic understanding of the world around us. If somebody would actually be indignant at the mere mention of such things as sin, that shows we've got a real problem on our hands.
I think something else I see in regards to this crisis of masculinity is the extent to which men go to defend it. A recent example of this, well, a current example, is really in regards to the sexual exploitation of women, mm-hmm. or the objectification of women.
Mm-hmm.
And something that's going on at the moment that's going on in Australia is the import, I believe it's from your home country, so I apologise, of the Lingerie Football League.
The
Lingerie Football League.
I haven't heard
League.
Of that.
Okay.
I'm not surprised that it comes from the US. I'm not at all surprised, because there's a lot of decadence there, but I haven't heard of that particular thing before.
Well, I guess I don't really need to go into a huge amount of explanation.
It involves women,
On what it is. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it involves women and lingerie and football.
So it's a form
of
like mild pornography of some sort.
Basically, okay. Yeah. And we've seen a number of feminist bloggers from all around the feminist sphere coming out against this.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen a lot of men and a lot of women coming out on Twitter, social networks, and even on Talkback Radio against these women who are saying, you know, this isn't right to treat women like this. It's quite mm-hmm. obvious that this sport is simply, as you said, mild pornography.
Mm-hmm.
It's not there as a sport.
Right.
That's all just a facade.
Right. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And the main voices that have been speaking out against the attempts to say that this is wrong
mm-hmm.
have been from men.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of name-calling and a lot of saying that, you know, it's unrealistic. Saying, oh, well, women look at men like that too, so why can't men do that,
mm-hmm.
etc. and so on. And you probably know all of this. And to me, it seems very adolescent, the justifications for this. and yet we still see it everywhere. We see it with pornography. Mm-hmm. I've seen many times in my discussions with people about pornography, they say, oh, well, the women wanted to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it's just men. You know, boys will be mm-hmm. boys. That kind of justification. How exactly do we cut through that kind of thinking? Because I know in myself, I'm tempted to think like that as well.
Sure. Yeah, and all men, I think all men everywhere, there may be some saintly exceptions to the rule, but I think they would be relatively rare. I think all men have a temptation to pornography, and if we're not careful, it can ensnare us. It can maybe you frequently read stories about men's lives who are utterly ruined. Their marriages are shattered, and they lose jobs, they lose their livelihoods because of a addiction to pornography. So I want to maybe frame my comments by saying I recognize it as a common and very powerful temptation for all men, myself included. So we all have to be realistic about this and I think see it for what it is. You're right, it is an adolescent approach to try to make excuses or rationalize it. And you know, even this the stupid saying boys will be boys, well, let's not forget, guys, you're not boys, you're men. And you know, boys will be boys in other ways too, but we wouldn't respect or accept an 8-year-old behavior out of a 35-year-old man. And it wouldn't play at work. It wouldn't play in the household. So it's a catchphrase that doesn't mean anything. Mm. Number one, the bodily urge to procreate is very powerful. God made us this way, and I think He made us this way so that the human race would stay in existence. You know, if it were just a mild urge or no urge at all, none of us would be here. So we have to have. We need God's grace, of course, but we have to have a realistic approach to this if we're going to control our appetites. If we don't, the appetites will control us and they can destroy us. And a good parallel, I think, would be, even though it's not an exact parallel, would be that with food. In other words, if you saw somebody who had no self-control and just ate whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, not only would he be a blimp, but it would kill him eventually. And, you know, his friends and family would be right to say, you're destroying yourself. You got to stop this. And it's not that there's anything wrong with food, just there's nothing wrong with the bodily urge to procreate. But unless human beings, men and women, unless they strive to master that, it can destroy them. And I think that's the message that so many men today need to hear. We all need to hear it because society is not obviously geared toward promoting virtue and helping people to overcome vice. It's geared toward the slogan, if it feels good, do it. I mean, if this makes you feel good and quote unquote nobody's getting hurt, then go ahead and do it. Who's to stop you? And that presupposes this idea that there is no real moral accountability before God, and that your actions are really just morally neutral in some sense, and that at the end of your life, all these things that are done will just, you know, if God exists, He's not going to really say anything about them, and you haven't robbed any liquor stores or killed anybody, so you're going to go to heaven. But that's not at all what Jesus taught. That's not what Scripture and the Church teach. So we have an uphill battle to try to re-educate people. I don't know if we're ever going to be completely successful, but we can certainly do that on a man-to-man basis.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, do you think that there has been a loss of role models, male role models, not just through the media, but especially mm-hmm. in terms of our own lives? We have such a high divorce rate
yeah.
and families that are in crisis, that are broken. And because of that, we do see a lot of men that aren't in contact with their children
yeah.
or children growing up surrounded by men who don't have this masculine virtue.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that really does play a role, especially today?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it would be ludicrous to deny that proposition. I definitely do. It goes back to my earlier point, and that is that unless men know what it means to be a man, they can't become the men that God created them to be, that Christ wants them to be, Christ himself being the ideal man. You know, he was a man for others. He was a man of strength, integrity, a man of asceticism. His whole life was devoted toward, up until the beginning of his public ministry, it was devoted toward his family and being under the authority of his parents. And when he began his public ministry, his whole life was devoted to others, including the greatest act ever, which is the crucifixion, to die for us, as the Bible says, while we were still dead in our sins, he loved us so much that he was willing to die for us. That's the kind of masculinity that all men are called to not only idealize, but to strive for, each in their own way. And so I think the solution to this problem, of course, ultimately is Jesus Christ. The difficulty is, how do we get men to pry themselves away from their video game or their sporting event and actually begin to contemplate the things that really matter, Jesus Christ and his teachings? That's, I think, where the real effort has to be placed. I mean, thank God, you know, our bishops and priests are doing exactly that. To the extent that they're doing it, they're doing that. And organizations like the Catholic Adult Education Center here in the Archdiocese of Sydney, what's happening in the Diocese of Parramatta, and all those initiatives, Theology on Tap, these are all wonderful ways, like tugboats, really. If you think of this sort of inert, lazy male phenomenon of guys, you know, focused on porn, video games, drinking, and sports, well, that's this big ocean liner that can't really move. So the tugboats are kind of helping to move it in the right direction so that it can actually get out into the open waters and be what it's intended to be. And I'm very pleased to not only see those things, but have a little role to play while I'm here and trying to help push those things forward.
How do we separate masculinity from femininity? Because another, going back again to our contemporary thought, is this urge to advocate the unisex, that we don't have a complementary role to play, that our ultimate goal in society is to make gender differences between masculinity and femininity non-existent. Perhaps that's too great a thing to say, that there's a mission to do that throughout society, but there is certainly an undercurrent of
some people
happening.
Definitely have that agenda. Yeah, I would agree. It may be an unspoken agenda, but I think some people do operate on that basis.
So what would you say is the difference then between masculinity and femininity, and why does it matter?
Well, okay. I would begin by saying that to deny the complementarity and the differences would be a lot like denying the law of gravity. Someone might be offended and angry that the law of gravity is there, and he may deny that it exists, but he has to live in the world in which it does exist. So point one, he or she who makes this claim would not even be in existence if it were not for the complementarity of men and women. Because if you take, for example, either the man or the woman, just physiologically, the body doesn't make any sense on its own apart from or out of relation to the other. So, you know, why would nature create the male body, for example, with these abilities that have no other use other than unless a woman is in the picture, and vice versa for the female. So even our very bodies, Pope John Paul II talked about this a great deal in his Theology of the Body lectures, or what is commonly known now as the Theology of the Body. So I think even at that level, there's an innate recognition that, sure, there's a difference here. And so from a biological level, a physiological level, and really just the anthropology of men and women, we know that we're different and we need one another. Men, just to back up a step to the biological or physiological level, men are external and women are internal physiologically in terms of receptivity and proactivity. In the male anthropology, the psychology of male, and I'm not a psychologist, so I'm not going to try to enter into the domain of true psychologists because that's not my training. But I know enough to know that men are geared to act upon things. They build, they tear down, they fight, they defend, they go out. There's a kind of a conquering mentality, or at the very least, there's a proactive mentality. Women, and this doesn't mean every last woman, obviously, but generally speaking, women are the ones who civilize. They're the ones who elevate. They're the ones who make less savage this world that men are out there trying to subdue. They are the ones who nurture the children. They instill virtue and they teach and all those things. Doesn't mean that any given man could not do that role or that any given woman could not go out and do it. But what I'm saying at more of a macro level is that men and women are different insofar as in all cultures everywhere, there's this general tendency to operate along these two ways, along these two axes. So in the modern world, we have to take that into account, I think, and then seek to to have that complementarity for in the home, for example, a husband and wife, where they recognize they're utterly equal. You know, there is no male or female, Jew nor Greek, or a slave nor free before Christ. So we absolutely must insist on the utter equality of men and women. Men are not better than women, but women are not better than men. And when we recognize this, I think it helps to unlock the door to see that once we not only respect and act upon that biblical notion of equality before God, that it allows us, it frees us then to say, I don't have to compete with you, you know, nor do you have to compete with me. And we don't have to try to minimize these wonderful differences that exist. The differences are there for a purpose. And when we realize that, we can all relax, take a deep breath, and begin becoming the men and the women that we're called to be. So we won't have the striving and fighting and insane competition, which really doesn't amount to anything.
That's very true. With regards to finally, what really makes the man? How do we become the men for men?
Yeah.
The men that we're called to be?
I can only speak maybe from two points of view. One would be my own. So if you'll forgive me for being somewhat self-referential here, I'll just mention a few things from my own experience, because I know at least my own story. And then I can also advert maybe to, obviously, the ideal of Christ and the great saints as really the goal. As for me, I went through, and I think I talked about this in the men's conference, if I'm not mistaken. I went through a period of adolescent selfishness and sin. By the time I was 14 or so, I had learned to play the bass guitar, and I got pretty good at it. And I thought I was so good that I would become the next Paul McCartney, which was, of course, ridiculous. But at the time, I got caught up in the whole narcissistic mentality of playing rock and roll music, all the pretty girls, and everything that goes along with that. Luckily, I never fell into any kind of drug use or anything. I think my guardian angel must have been working overtime, because people all around me were, you know, smoking weed and taking cocaine and things like that. But I never even tried any of it, because it didn't hold any allure to me. Some of the other things held quite a bit of allure for me. And so that, for me, is what I contrast the lesson that I learned when I was about 26. 26 is when I had my really kind of convulsive and very painful year of reconversion, where all of my selfishness and the sins and the attitudes and all that stuff began to really catch up with me. I mean, I was still Catholic. I was going to church. I was, you know, I would say grace before meals. And it was strange, because it was a kind of a compartmentalized Catholicism. I was Catholic in many ways, but not in all ways. And in those ways that I wasn't, I would rationalize and say, well, I can engage in this behavior, or I can do this or look at that or something, because, well, you know, I'm just going to do that. And yet I would find myself going to confession and falling back into the same thing. So what happened was, for me, and this is why I think I can offer something on this point, is that by the time I was about 26 years old, I was by then married, I had a few children, it all caught up with me, and I realized I'm an idiot. And not only am I an idiot, I'm on a rocket ship to hell, and I have to change. I've got to become the man Christ wants me to be. So for me, the answer to your question was, I had to, number one, I had to repent, and I had to basically turn everything over to Christ and say, no more compartmentalizing my life. I'm not going to be 80% Catholic but 20% pagan, or whatever it was. I'm going to really seek you, Lord, and I'm not going to hold back. And it doesn't, I mean, I didn't cure overnight, but on the other hand, once I realized this is what I have to do, with God's grace, I was able to make a decisive turn away from those things and decisively turn in the direction of being prayerful. And what I mean by that is to be prayerful at a heart level, not just, you know, mechanically reciting prayers before meals, that kind of thing. So that, for me, was a turning point. And ever since then, it has been, you know, the journey in the direction of becoming that man. And hopefully by the end of my life, I will have gotten to the point where I can say that. Generally speaking, with regard to what the Gospels tell us, when I look at the lives of the saints, I see something similar. I also see that there's very often some sort of crisis that happens. And sadly, sometimes it could be the loss of a marriage, or some financial setback or a health problem or some other type of real jolt that it takes to get someone's attention. Luckily, I didn't have to go through any of that. I thank God for that. Some men do. So for any man listening right now, or any woman for that matter, because women obviously have to deal with a different but similar set of things, my advice would be don't wait for that jolt. And, you know, let's hope it never happens, but be proactive in the meantime. Conversion, repentance, and doing what we can with God's grace to try to cultivate the virtues to help us root out our predominant sins. I think that's really, it's the simple but not easy answer.
Those are good words. Just finally, do you think women have a role to play in drawing men out of that depth of their adolescence and to bring them to that manhood? Do you think that women have a role to play in that?
Obviously. Beginning with the Blessed Virgin Mary, of course, our mother, as Revelation 12:17 says, that she is the mother of all those who believe in Jesus and seek to keep his commandments. So Mary, the mother of all Christians, has a unique maternal role and a very powerful one. I advocate to men everywhere, whenever I have an opportunity, pray the rosary every day. If you're having trouble with chastity and purity, if you're having trouble with drink, if you're leading a double life and you don't know how to get out of it, turn these things over to the Lord first and foremost, but don't neglect to seek the maternal intercession of Our Lady. Pray the rosary. Wear a miraculous medal, not as a good luck charm. Obviously, the miraculous medal doesn't do anything per se, but it's a good reminder of Our Lady's presence and her care for us. So that would be number one as far as women are concerned. And I hope that men listening right now who are thinking, well, that sort of describes me, I hope they'll pick up a rosary and just make a point of praying the rosary every day. 5 decades of the rosary. It's like a muscle. If at first it's going to be a bit awkward and you won't exactly know how to do it, but the more you exercise, if you're doing curls every day, the more you exercise, the easier it becomes and the more, you know, healthy you become. Secondly, wives, let's talk first about mothers. It's a sad thing these days that many parents are afraid to be direct with their children about things like the Lord and salvation, the sacraments, the role of the church and all that. And they even, some of them, many of them, buy into this very mistaken notion that, well, my child's 18 years old, so he's out of my hair now and I'll let him make his own decisions. Our role as parents, moms and dads, doesn't end at 18 years of age. We have to be different and have different approaches in that way. But I think mothers especially have to show their sons a good model of femininity. What does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to not just demand respect, but to deserve respect? How does the wife treat her husband with respect to him? Does she show that kind of Christian virtue? And I don't mean people should be fuddy-duddies or sticks in the mud or anything like that, but I mean there's a quiet power and dignity in women who recognize the gift that God has given them, and they make use of it. So I think growing up, when boys see this, their mother becomes for them a sort of ideal, whether for good or for ill, and they may wind up having a distorted ideal of women in that sense. The other thing, of course, would be wives. Wives have a totally different way of interacting with their husbands, but even there, they have to not be compromisers. You know, if they see their husband drifting into the cult of me, you know, where it's all about video games and things like that, they need to say, honey, this is, you know, you're not living up to your ideal. You're not living up to what you and I both promised that we would strive to live up to. How can I help you? What can we do that will do this? And I think if it's an approach that's taken from the standpoint of love and compassion, and I love you, I'm your friend, I'm your helpmate, I want to do whatever I can, I think then the guy will be a lot less likely to say, hey, get off my back, leave me alone, you know, because it won't come across as nagging or complaining. It will come across as true love really should. I'm sure if we had hours and hours, we could develop this theme endlessly, but those three issues, the Blessed Virgin Mary, the role of mothers, and the role of wives, it seems to me that if those three components are present, a man has a very good chance at becoming the man Christ wants him to be.
Well, thank you for those very wise words. You know, I think we really do, as men, need a good hard look at ourselves sometimes to be able to realign ourselves with the will of God and direct ourselves towards Him. Now, you're heading to Melbourne today,
yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Yep. So how many days do you have to go on your tour?
Not many. I was on Skype with my wife yesterday, and she was really happy that the this is a 20-day excursion door-to-door. So it's been wonderful for me, but yes, I've got two more days in Melbourne. I'll be speaking there tonight. Tonight's Tuesday. So I have an event there tonight. I have events tomorrow and possibly another one tomorrow night, although I don't know for sure. It's a blur to me now.
Yeah.
And then on Thursday morning, we'll come back to Sydney and tie up the loose ends, and then we'll head back home to the States on Friday, on the 1st.
Awesome. Well, on behalf of Australia, I guess, thank you very much for being here. It's been a great tour from the bits that I've seen of it, the two events that I've gone to and the interviews that I've done with you. It's been really amazing and some words that we really do need here in Australia.
Thank you. For my part, and I really appreciate you saying that, for my part, I say it with utter sincerity and complete candor. I love Australia. I love the Australian people. People have been so kind and welcoming to me, so I will always treasure these 3 weeks in Australia, and I've made good new friends now, and this is certainly a place I'd love to come back to.
All right, so I'm glad that we've had that effect on you. So.
Oh, yes, you have.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Patrick wraps up his Australian tour in Melbourne on the 29th and 30th of May. If you missed out this time, never fear, visit patrickmadrid.com and you can find out more about Patrick's work and where to find it. Cradio, nourishing the soul of the digital generation.